Hey everybody, welcome to J&J on Jazz, powered by Jazzwire.
And this is my friend Jeff, and Jeff uses a blow dryer.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I know you can tell. Here's the thing. This is my friend James, and he uses a blow dryer.
Because this doesn't just happen for us. Like,
you would think it does. You would think that just happens, but no, you put some work into it, and I like that about you. And that's why you're a movie star here on YouTube with me.
We're legit stars. That's why we're legit stars, because we take the time. We take the time to put things where they're supposed to be, right? That's
not all jazz musicians do that.
No?
Not all jazz musicians do that. Well, all right. So today, what we want to jump into, James and I have been teaching for years and years. We've worked with hundreds or thousands of students, and we see kind of recurring things, right? And lots of these can be quick fixes. And so a lot of you out there, this may resonate with you. Some of you may be teachers. Some of you may be students actually working on this stuff. And by the way, many of these things I'm still working on. So let me talk about one of them. I know James has a couple. Let me just jump in. So one of the things I want to talk about, and this may be saxophone specific. James, correct me if I'm wrong. Sax players, stop bending notes for the love of God. See, James knows what I'm talking about. And now, so it's, so, and that's why the saxophone is such a better instrument than the trumpet.
It is.
There's,
I never disagree with that statement, guys. I never do. Okay.
Well, so the saxophone is great because it is so vocal-like. We can do vibrato and we can bend notes and we can do slurs and glissandos and all this wonderful stuff. But the bad news is it can get a little out of control, a little overdone, a little overwrought, and all of that kind of stuff. So lots of folks, when they come into Jazzwire or come to work with me personally, one of the things we do is learn about just how to control the instrument and hit everything right on pitch. And when we can do that, of course, we should take advantage of all the things that the saxophone can do or other instruments, right? But first of all, we want to be in tune, on pitch, core. And when you can do that, when you can show me you can do that, then we move on. And for a lot of people, it's just a habit, right? It's just a habit that we have to break. And for a lot of people, there's folks on Jazzwire doing it right now today, we were talking about. And in a week, they're going to have this solved. But it makes people sound kind of amateurish. Mm-hmm. When you listen to John Coltrane, when you listen to Dexter, when you listen to Michael Brecker, they're not playing like that, right? So we have to just kind of control the instrument. So that's one cool little thing that can be fixed quickly. But here's the thing. A lot of people have been doing it for 30, 40, 50 years, the adult amateurs we're talking to, the semi-pros, and no one's really pulled them aside and said, eh, not so much with that. So that's a big one. And that's and it does take, you know, sort of a teacher or a mentor to walk you through it. There are some mechanics involved, but man, it's a big deal. So what do you think? Is there an equivalent on the trumpet with that?
Yeah, there is. Now, bending notes on the trumpet, because the trumpet is inferior to the saxophone, and I mean that, I really do. the bending notes on the trumpet is hard, right? And if you miss and fall into the air chamber below, it sounds horrible. But the equivalent is when people learn how to play grace notes and learn how to incorporate those into their solos. Sometimes they'll do it to excess. And Jeff, I've thought about this a lot. With any of these sorts of more vocal devices, when you hear a player doing them to excess, it's almost like because you've learned a new trick, right? And you just keep doing it. You keep doing it. So I love the idea of a community like Jazzwire where you can pull somebody aside in a positive way and say, I dig why you're doing that, but you know, let all things in moderation, right? But yeah, like the whole the whole grace note thing, like a lot of times you'll hear trumpet players do those really excessively. So, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good one. Well, cool. So what do you have? So these ideas of sort of like a really good, powerful, quick fix.
So the one that I've got two, but the one that I'll start with is when I'm hearing people who are, let's say they're maybe more beginner to intermediate improvisers, and they're trying to make sense of rhythm, and they play, instead of playing eighth note lines or basing their ideas in quarter notes and eighth notes, they use a lot of quarter note triplets, right? So if I were to demonstrate, like,
yep, one, I've heard that
two,
a lot.
Yeah, yeah, right. One, two, It's like, whoa, man, you never really get a sense of where the time is. And I think the reason that folks do that is because that feels like they're playing fast. That feels like, to somebody who's just starting out, that they may be thinking that they're playing eighth notes, and they don't have that grounding in the time just yet. So what I do when I encounter a player doing that is I break it down and say, we're not going to worry about the notes right now. We're going to use our best friend when we're trying to think about forward momentum. We're going to use the chromatic scale, right? And we're just going to play the chromatic scale in eighth notes all the time, and I don't care where you start and where you stop. And it takes a minute, but that usually can get them to feel where the time is and what eighth notes actually feel like. So it might sound like this, too. I don't care where they start, where they stop, but just getting them to play shapes of eighth notes and use the chromatic scale, that usually gets them to where they can feel what eighth notes actually feel like. Does that make sense? Have you encountered that,
man,
too?
Man, that's a huge deal. I hear it a lot. And I think you're right, because if we think about a medium tempo where many of us like playing, that eighth notes are a little fast, or we don't know the next right note to play. So a lot of folks aren't comfortable with the eighth note flow. So they play something as fast as their brain will give them notes. And that becomes quarter note triplets.
Dig it. Yeah, yeah.
It's something like that. It's like just sort of a governor or a speed limit that a lot of people have. So I love the idea, because there's nothing inherently wrong with quarter note triplets. We're allowed to play them. But open any jazz transcription book from any era of jazz on any instrument. How many quarter note triplets are you going to see? The answer is somewhere near none. Right? How many eighth notes are you going to see? The answer is somewhere near a bazillion. So eighth notes are the language of jazz. So I love the idea of taking the note choice out of it and just playing chromatic, whatever, but get the flow. And it probably sounds more legit right away, doesn't it?
Yeah. And there's, I hear this in drummers too. And when I've worked with drummers, like at the college, you know, I'll sometimes hear that. It's one thing to hear that in their comping in their left hand, especially if they're doing like quarter note triplets against the quarter note itself, right? Some of that stuff is very hip, but a lot of times I hear it in their soloing too. Ding, 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 that kind of stuff. And so when that happens, I'll tell the drummer, look it, all the rest of these drums you've got in front of you, you no longer have those in front of you. To the point where I'll take the floor tom away and grab the rack tom. If they're using two in my band, they've got one too many, right? So just focus on that snare drum, because that brings them back. If they study drums at all, that brings them back to rudiments. That brings them back to that kind of a thing. So it even manifests itself in drummers, I think, Jeff. It's just something that happens.
Man, I love it. Well, and this is music, right? So I mean, drummers play music. Yes, it's true. You may be hearing it here first, but all of this stuff, playing good melodies, yeah, that's what a good drummer does, right? So all this stuff is really, really important. So those are two cool things already. That idea of sort of controlling the stylistic elements. And for saxophone players, it's bending. That's a real saxophone thing. And then this idea of the eighth note flow might be a way to put it. So let me offer up one other idea. And by the way, this is stuff that we're working on inside Jazzwire. And so now for you adult, amateur, semi-pros out there, I want you to come in and check about what I'm talking about here. When I mention Jazzwire, what is that? We have a 1-week free trial. So just go right to this address. You need your name and an email address, and that's your passcode to get in, right? That's all you need. In 20 seconds, you can be inside Jazzwire and be working not only with hundreds and hundreds of musicians like you from around the world, but me, and getting to work together every day on this stuff. I would love to hear your eighth notes. I'd love to hear your tone, and let's get into it and talking about it. So the next thing I want to talk about In my teaching, James, lots of times I talk about the difference between what we're doing and how we're doing it. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of teachers, I think, make the mistake of being all about what all the time. Hey, here's a new thing to learn. Here's a new lick. Here's a new device. Here's a new chord substitution. What? Here's a what. And so we're just getting piled up under a whole pile of things that we need to practice. Yeah. To me, most of us can get a lot better, a lot quicker by working on how we're doing what we're already doing, right? The what's are the easy part to teach. Hey, kid, here's a cool lick, right? But when we work on how we're playing, and so that's the idea with the bending of the notes. When we work on how we're playing the instrument, it immediately sounds so much more professional. And whatever you were playing in the first place already sounds a lot better. And so that's a faster fix. So it's not all about quick fixes all day long, but there's nothing wrong with some quick fixes.
That's right.
So a big one for me is phrasing. And so lots of times, so this is kind of like what James was saying about those quarter notes and sort of playing rhythms that don't sound like jazz. So lots of times I hear phrases that don't sound like music. In other words, phrases that go on too long and that they're not going with the phrasing of the song. So think about a tune like Take the A Train. Two four-measure phrases, right? And so that makes sense. Billy Strayhorn said something, and he took a rest. He took a break. Where? In the fourth measure. And then he said something else. It was kind of unrelated, in a sense. But then he took a break. So I want to get my people playing in four-measure phrases. And that's really hard and really mind-blowing for a lot of people. And so when I say a four-measure phrase, I don't mean four measures of notes. I mean three measures of notes and then a break. Or maybe the fourth measure is a half note or a whole note, right?
Yes. Ding, 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 ding. Yes.
So that sounds organized, right? So again, a lot of us are anxious about using the chord tones we know, or we're thinking so hard about what the flat nine is or something like that, that we're just sort of anxiously playing things we know or hope we know.
Yeah.
And not thinking about where it should happen, right? We're just saying phrases we know, but not putting them quite into place. So improvising, if I improvise over A Train, so one, two, a one, two. So I play four.
You sound so great. I'm sorry. You sound so great. You sound beautiful. Wow.
Thank you. I played four-measure phrases, right? I played three measures and rested, and played three measures and rested. So when I get people playing four-measure phrases and sentences that make sense, it is such a big change. Play all the stuff you were playing before. It could have been wrong notes you were playing before. Your wrong notes are going to sound better with this phrasing. And so I've worked with some pretty advanced players. Actually, in the blue community this week on Jazz Wire, we're working on this hard, hard Bill Evans song called Very Early. Tricky
Ooh, yeah.
tune.
That is hard.
And so the advice to some of these players is, let's actually forget about the chords and the substitutions and the Bill Evans harmony and all that. Let's talk about phrasing, four measure phrases. And this is a challenge to some of these people. It's kind of interesting. So that's kind of what I got. That's one of the biggest fixes I know.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You I love that you're talking about phrasing right now and encouraging students to not be obsessed with the notes and the harmony. That certainly can get someone into like vapor lock and they lose that ability to convey music. My second sort of thing that I hear a lot is actually very harmonic, very specific, and it's small, but to me it's a huge one. And it's when I hear improvisers incorrectly playing the flat six on a minor chord, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a way to do it, right? There's totally a way to do it, but you almost have to earn the right to do it that to earn the right to play that flat six. So if we just take we'll take that Miles tune "So What" that we talked about in our prior episode here, right? So we're used to hearing that right? There's that B natural on a D Dorian scale that you heard me leaning on, right? That's the note mm-hmm. that sounds really pretty, yeah. right? But if somebody plays a B flat over that D minor tonality, oh man, it doesn't work. And so I don't know what it is that students are oftentimes drawn to that flat six. And so I like to use "So What" as just an exercise. I'll put on a play along track to just D minor tonality or whatever minor tonality I hear students playing that. If we're working on a tune and it's in C minor and I hear students playing a whole bunch of A flats, like, all right, I'll sit down at the piano or we'll put a play along track on just on C minor. And I just make them play rhythmic ideas only using the six that I want them to use. So if we're on D minor, I'm gonna play a bunch of B naturals, right? I just make them live on that sixth scale degree that I want them to live, because I think sometimes they just. I think it's a beautiful note. It's very colorful, but I think there's a bit of an aversion to that among folks who are maybe more beginning improvisers. Do you hear that tendency sometimes too?
Well, yeah. And again, we're, you know, in the green community in Jazzwire, we're working on Burke's works, Dizzy Gillespie Minor Blues. And I'm talking about harmonic minor and how to use it. Harmonic minor brings up that flat six. And so now we're having to talk about how and when do we use mm-hmm. that note? The natural six is nice. So this is going to bring up a lot of questions, I know, on YouTube, on Facebook, in Jazzwire, this six scale degree thing. But that's cool, man. I love that you know, want to hear that natural six. The flat six can be problematic, but it can be used correctly too.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So, man, that's huge. Well, man, we talked about four different things, right? We talked about a note-specific thing. We talked about phrasing. We talked about, gosh, where did we start? We talked about over-stylistic stuff. Mm-hmm. What was the other thing you mentioned?
And quarter note triplets, right? That deal.
There you go.
The
rhythmic flow. So any one of these things. And now many of us have most of this going on, right? So pick one of these things. And if you're not sure, and here's the thing, you're probably doing some of this stuff and not aware of it. Right? Or not in control of it. So of course, that's where you get a teacher from. And speaking of that, you guys have heard me talk about da-da-da-da, Maryland Summer Jazz, which is coming up at the end of July every year. Now this year we're doing it online just because of what's going on around the world. We have people signing up from all over the world. And the amazing thing about Maryland Summer Jazz is it's 3 days. We have 2 3-day sessions. So a total of six. A lot of people do three, some people do six. And to focus on jazz 8 hours a day or more for 3 days in a row is a big deal. And it's kind of life-changing for a lot of the adult students that we work with. So if that's a good fit for you, if you're living, you know, overseas, or, you know, we have folks coming from Europe and Australia and all over the place. So if traveling doesn't work for you, well, guess what? Online works, right? So I hope you'll check out Maryland Summer Jazz, and you can go right here to get signed up for 3 days. We have all sorts of special guests coming too, so it's going to be fantastic. Well, James, this is great, man. I really, you know, kind of dig hearing how other teachers and players, you know, what they focus in on and what they find to be, you know, a really powerful thing for their students to work on.
Yeah, fantastic. Me too. It's really affirming, and this is great. This is going to help me in my teaching and my own playing. So I hope everybody got something out of this. And yeah, we've all got these tendencies, and it's just important to recognize them. That's it.
Beautiful. Well, I'm going to go work on my hair a little bit, man. You do the same, because that doesn't just happen.
Yeah, it's getting kind of frizzy. I need to get a silk drop going because it's getting a little out of control. So I'll be right. I'll be ready for next week, man. We'll be good.
Peace out, brother.
All right, keep swinging, y'all.